My name's Adele Onyango, and welcome to another episode of Legally Clueless. No, seriously, I have no clue what I'm doing, but I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. Hey you, welcome to episode 219 of Legally Clueless. Thank you so much for rocking with the podcast. If this is your first time listening, audio episodes like this go out every single Monday, and you can stream them on Spotify and everywhere you find podcasts on. Make sure you check out our website, which is legallycluelessafrica.com. While there, you can sign up to be part of our community. You can watch our tour series and watch our video series and all that good stuff, like our events. And there's another one coming up really soon, so make sure you check out our events tab. If you want to share your story on this podcast, make sure you fill out the storyteller form. It's in the show notes, a link to it. Fill it out and then we will get back to you. I have to say, just this week, I recorded such a powerful story of an African woman who's an entrepreneur. She is from Botswana. Her business is in Botswana. And so we recorded her story virtually. And it just made me think that I truly want to record more African entrepreneurs. So if you are in business, you've just started, small, medium-sized, big, whatever stage you're at, I really want to record more of your stories because I learned so much from her. So make sure you fill out the storyteller form. And in case you're not in business, but you have somebody in your life who is, share the storyteller form with them. The last thing you need to do is join our social media spaces, or as I like to call them, our warm, fuzzy corner of the internet. We are on Instagram at Legally Clueless Africa. And I keep forgetting to tell you that we are on TikTok as well. Legally Clueless Africa. Links to all our social media are in the show notes. Very excited about this episode because part two of Chris's story is on the way. Listen to this.
I was acting in a TV series in Kenya called Tahidi High. I remember that morning when I was going on set at like 10 a.m., just getting ready for my scene to go in. I saw a call from my brother and immediately I picked it up because I knew that my mom was in hospital, and so we were all just like monitoring. He says, "Mom is not doing very well, so you need to come down to Nakuru." And that time I really needed the money that was coming from Tahidi High because this is what we were using to pay her hospital bill. Immediately when I saw my brother and how he just walked towards me, I knew that things were not okay. And my mom was lying there and she had passed on. And I cried my heart out, because if there's someone who loved me unconditionally, was my mom. If there's someone who never judged me, not even one day ever picked up their phone and made me feel like I was different, was my mom. She had died the night of, but my brother just did not know how to tell me. And I was so mad at him. I was like, "You should have told me. I would have been here, you know. I would have been, I had an opportunity to say goodbye," because I felt like I was robbed of that opportunity.
Yep, that's coming up in a bit. I can't wait for you to listen to part two of Chris's story, because I found it quite marvelous how I found parts of me in their story. And yeah, stories are so powerful like that. Anyway, before we get there though, I am recording this as I pack because I'm off to Dakar again. Yes, I'm going back to Senegal. It's so crazy. I was just there last month for work and now I'm going back, and I'm very excited about this because I'm going to shoot. I'm going to be away for a bit actually. I'm going to be shooting a show that I'm co-hosting, and it's produced by an organization called Niel, and they are based in Senegal. They do a lot of work in influencing change in policy, in behaviors or practices, and they're really just committed to ensuring the preservation of human rights in Africa. And so the show is going to be looking at influencing change in terms of health and health access on the continent. I'm very excited about it because about 2 years ago, I declared something for my career and for my business. Number one, I said that not only do I want to be at the forefront of revolutionizing, is that a word? Anyway, I've made it a word. Media in Africa and, you know, just the digital media wave. I want to be at the forefront of that. And I believe we're doing that with Legally Clueless. But that's not the only thing I said. I said that if I was to host any TV, video, show, whatever, it would have to be continental. And so I kind of like say these things and declare it to myself and to the universe and say, okay, you know what, I'm going to keep my end of the bargain, which is work. And so I kept honing my skill
And then this opportunity came, and I really like that they seeked me for this. And it speaks to a couple of things that I've wanted to share. In my career, I've seen the power in being very clear about your intended outcome, you know, in writing it out. So I make use of my whiteboard. In every house I've lived in, there's always been a whiteboard. I think when I first moved into this house, I didn't have a whiteboard for a bit because I had to get rid of my other whiteboard. It was a bit too big. And I just felt so uncomfortable, man. I was like, I need to change this situation. This is horrible. And so I have a whiteboard. So back to what I was saying. In my career, I have seen the power in being very clear about your intended outcome, in writing it out. So whatever I write on my whiteboard always comes to life. Even if it takes me years, once written on that board, it will always be actualized. And I also have seen the power in saying your intentions out loud, not to others, but loudly to yourself, and saying it often. I feel like this is to condition your very being into taking the statement of intent to truly be possible and attainable, you know. And yeah, this is not the first time this has happened to me, and that's just a process I go through. It seems like very small things to do, like, yeah, write it out, yeah, speak it out, but I found them to be very powerful. And whenever I walk into my office, one of the first things I see is my whiteboard. So it's like a constant reminder of where we're going and why we're doing what we're doing, and that we can. And then when I say it, what's added is we're going there and you can actually actualize this. You're not less than, you can completely achieve this. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but also I've just realized that I kind of have forgotten to give you the song of the week. And so the song of the week is a song that I do believe I've shared before, but let me explain why I'm bringing it back. So at the end of this week, well, by the time you hear this, this will already have happened. I am giving a keynote speech at the EQ for Africa conference, and it's really centered around mental health, mental wellness, looking at our wellness in workplaces, harmful stereotypes that really affect men. And in the process of writing my speech, obviously, I had to do a lot of research and look at the numbers and see what's going on in Kenya in terms of access to interventions. I know, I'm going somewhere. I'm coming back to the song. Please stick with me, stick with me. And one of the things that I dived into is reading up on suicide rates and the data. It just reminded me of, I've spoken about this in previous episodes, last year, which is 2022. In March, and just being so overwhelmed with suicidal thoughts in a way that had never happened to me before, and having to climb my way out of that. And, you know, looking at those numbers, they weren't just numbers. There were people that we've lost. There were people who felt so alone. And it just, I don't even know how to say it in English. In Kiswahili, just guzad me. It touched me. It just, those were not numbers. The statistics were not numbers. So the reason I like this song, first, I really like the artist. His name is Koji Radical. And I stumbled on this particular song a couple of years ago. You know, in the hook, the chorus, there is a line that goes, I can't go back to feeling like I want to die. That line always sticks with me whenever I hear this song, because I try to promise myself over and over that I wouldn't allow myself to go back to that. And so when I was preparing for this speech, I was reminded of that song, and I was like, note to self, I have to share this in the next episode. So it's Can't Go Back. It's by Koji Radical. I love the video even. Oof, I just really like that man. His music is awesome. And I've put a link to it in the show notes. Okay, let's jump into part two of Chris's story. If you've not listened to part one, it's in episode 218. You may want to listen to it first so that you're not floating. All right. Now, I actually didn't know that Chris and I had grief specifically from losing our mothers in common. And this is what I love about stories. You can find parts of yourself in someone else's story. And it's just marvelous how we're truly connected as humans. So part two of Chris's story will weave us through grief and taking back your power, taking back your story, and taking back your identity.
100 African stories on Legally Clueless. Stories from Africa.
So in the year 2013, I was acting in a TV series in Kenya called Tahidi, and I was the head girl for Tahidi for 4 years, because that show, you have one role and you're there for a mad minute. So I was the head girl there for 4 years. And I remember there's a season where my mom was very, very sick back in Nakuru, and it was just her and my bro. And I remember that morning when I was going on set at like 10 a.m., just getting ready for my scene to go in, I saw a call from my brother, and immediately I picked it up because I knew that my mom was in hospital, and so we were all just like monitoring. And when he called me, he says, "Mom is not doing very well, so you need to come down to Nakuru." So I said, "Oh man, you know, I'm just about to go in." And that time I really needed the money that was coming from Tahidi, because this is what we were using to pay her hospital bill, to help with very many different things here and there, and also for me to survive. He said, "No, this one is important, just come." I phoned up a friend and I said, "Please, can you drive me to Nakuru? Because, you know, I've been told that mom is not well and my brother said that I need to go." I remember that drive was so long because my brother kept on calling and just checking in, "Oh, where have you reached? Blah, blah, blah." And I just kept on saying, "How is she?" He said, "She's okay. You know, she's come out of a theater, but she's okay, but she's really not okay. So just when you get here, please do let me know." So I got to Nakuru and went into the hospital where my mom was. And immediately when I saw my brother and how he just walked towards me, I knew that things were not okay. So he came and he held me. And immediately when he was hugging me, I turned around and I saw my mom's elder brother. And I was like, "Okay, what's going on?" So my brother just held me and he said, "I'm going to take you to the room where mom is." And we walked all the way into that room, and her best friend was there and all that. And my mom was lying there and she had passed on. And I cried my heart out, because if there's someone who loved me unconditionally, was my mom. If there's someone who believed in me, was my mom. If there's someone who never judged me, who never, you know, all these different kind of things, not even one day ever picked up their phone and made me feel like I was different, or was my mom. And every single thing that she had, she made sure, she said, "I'm going to pay your college fees because I see that this is what you want to do. You want to do this acting stuff. It's okay. I know your dad is not going to support, but I'm going to try and get some money and we're going to do this." And she was there. And I think in that moment, you know, first I was angry because she had died the night of, but my brother just did not know how to tell me. And I was so mad at him. I was like, "You should have told me. I would have been here, you know. I would have been, I had an opportunity to say goodbye," because I felt like I was robbed of that opportunity. But that loss of my mom to date, you know, grief is not linear. Grief is not linear. I remember like 2 months ago, the beginning of this year, I was crashing. And I was like, 10 years later, this is what I'm feeling. It's like I've just lost her, you know, like 2 days ago. And I know you would totally relate with this, Adele. And just, I just felt like I'd lost someone who was my number one ride or die. And I remember that whole year of 2013 into 2014, I deferred from university. I just couldn't do anything because I was like, "Who's going to call me to say that you did an amazing job? Who's going to be the one to come and watch my acting, you know, plays in Alliance Francaise, because she used to come? Who's going to call and say, 'I watched an episode of Yonta Idia and I'm so proud of you,' you know? And who is that person that I'm going to lean on?" And that's who she was, you know? So thinking about it even now, 10 years later, after she passed on, that is one of the person that I lost that definitely impacted my way in my life in a certain way, because I feel like society was officially exposed. And now I found people who are not going to love you unconditionally. I found people who are going to judge you immediately they have an opportunity to do that. I found people who are not going to believe in your dreams and just tell you that your dreams, you know, are useless. You know, you're not going to go anywhere with this. Why don't you find a serious career and all those different kind of things? So the loss of my mom, you know, and may her soul continue resting in peace, is a very, very big loss to me, because genuinely, she was my mom and she loved me with everything that she had, you know? And also I think one of the positive things that when I think about her is I do believe that, you know, her spirit is still, you know, with us. So sometimes, you know, there are things that just happen in life and people are just like, your doors are always just opening up, things are just always working out for you. I'm like, my mom is alive, you know? Wherever she is opening those doors. She is giving me that unconditional love in the best way that she can, you know, because I believe in angels. And I'm just like, you know what? It's okay. It is, even when I think about her journey, her pain, I had to release her to just say she needed to rest. You know, she needed to rest. And maybe now in the spirit form, it's even a better experience. You know, when I think about it, you will definitely miss what you knew, but you can have a different relationship with them, even in their other different form of existence. But there's one particular story still when I came to Nairobi. So when I was acting at Allianz, so now I already had a role, you know, and there was a little bit of money coming in, checking in. So I decided I want to buy for myself a smartphone. So I went and I bought for myself a technophone at that particular point. It was 8,000 bob and I was feeling larger than life. I could take good pictures, you know, everything was working out. One day I'm coming from Umoja because that's where I used to stay. And we came and the matatu dropped us off at Ajib. And then I was walking past I&M. When I just crossed over to walk past I&M, there's a gentleman who was walking and he came and he passed me, blah, blah, blah. And then something fell off his pocket, like a brown little envelope. So I ignore it and I continue walking. Like I saw it happening, but I continue walking. Then there's a guy who just rushed right behind him and picked up the envelope and then kind of looked at me and saw that I had seen him. And then he continued walking. Then this other guy crossed over. So in my mind, I'm just like, whoa, another situation of someone being robbed in Nairobi. But I keep it moving. So this other guy who is walking now with the envelope, at some point slows down and then he waits for me and says in Kiswahili, Najua umeona, I know you've seen the envelope. Do you know what's in it? So this whole time I'm talking to him, but I'm not really talking to him because I'm like, please, like, I don't want to talk to you. So this one, then he looks at the envelope, then he shows me inside there was a bundle with like notes. Like I saw so many thousand bobs in there. And then he said, Ametoka bank. He's come from the bank. Then there was a slip over there and he looked and I saw it was an Equity Bank slip and it was like 200 and something thousand. And I don't know what happened at that particular point. It's that thing of seeing money and then they mess up with your brain. So he told me, you know, I'm not a bad person. I want to take most of the money, but I want to give you a little bit because you've seen, and I don't just want to leave you like that. And with all my good upbringing, every single thing that I've been taught, I was like, something happened there. Something happened there. Then he said, where are you going? I said to Allianz. And this whole time, I'm really not talking to him because I'm walking behind him and he's walking up ahead because he's like, oh, let's make sure that he's not seen us. So we go and there was a little Ethiopian restaurant around Allianz Francaise. Then he says, why don't you go to the washroom and check how much it is? And then you come out, then I'm going to give you a little bit of the money. All my problems, at that time I wanted to buy a TV. There's so many things that I was just like, wow, my life can change, blah, blah, blah. And this whole time I'm not even thinking about like, this is so wrong. So we go, he gives me the envelope and I'm just about to go into the washroom and he was sitting in one of the chairs. He says, but how will I trust you? This is Nairobi. So I went, I reached out to my bag and I gave him my ID. He told me ID, identification card, it's a paper, you can get another one. He was like, what else do you have there? So I was holding my phone and an ID. Then he says, leave me with your phone. In my mind, I'm calculating, I'm like, the phone was just 8,000 bob. So it's cool, dude, like I'll leave you with it. So I give him the phone and it's like so many things were happening very, very fast. I go into the washroom of this Ethiopian restaurant and then I enter the washroom and I lock myself inside. Then I open the bundle and it was newspapers folded, Adele, with like a clean 50 bob note, which was on top of the envelope where there's usually that small little clear patch. So that's what I was seeing. But also I think he had another bundle which had money because when he opened the first one, I saw a lot of money. But now this was newspaper wrapped with a nice little rubber band. Immediately I got out of the toilet. I was like, what? I was thinking about my phone that I had saved for like 2 months. I got out. That guy is like, what's going on? I'm like, where's the guy who was sitting here? He's like, oh, the guy that you came with. I'm like, yes, where is he? Oh, he's just crossed over and across the road is Uhuru Park. And when I looked at Uhuru Park, it was a swarm of people. And I just knew I got robbed in Nairobi. I remember walking into Allianz, and I found some of the actors there, Sheikh, Sicha Wanjiku, blah, 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 blah. And I was crying, and I'm like, I've been robbed. They're like, it's okay, chill, what happened? I gave them the story. They're like, please, you don't know that trick. Like that trick has been used for like 5 years in the city. Like, fam, please, you no longer live in Nakuru. Get with it. So every single time I remember that story, I'm just like always laughing out loud the way I was conned and robbed in Nairobi because of my greed, my stupidity. I was just like, man, okay, it is what it is. That's what happened. I think I would say what I fear the most right now is living an inauthentic life, because growing up, you know, I say this knowing that maybe from the age of like 15 to like 25 or like 26, 27, I lived a very inauthentic life. Not because I wanted to, but because of what society, you know, the rules that society set. So when I think about it, growing up as a kid, I grew up in a space where you were never viewed different just because you want to wear boys' clothes and safari boots. And in fact, my dad used to buy them for me. He's like, that's what you want to wear? Cool, rock it. You know, I was like, I don't want to wear dresses. Mom, I don't want to wear dresses. And she's like, last Sunday, you didn't wear a dress. So this Sunday, you have to wear that dress. And it was a whole big fight. And it was da 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 da. And my dad is just like, let her be. Like, just let her rock whatever she wants to rock. So I felt very affirmed. Then checking into high school, and now 15 to 25 up until now, me coming into Nairobi and working, my existence, you know, someone started saying, that's wrong. You're different. Why would you think like that? Why do you think that is what? Da-da-da-da. All these different rules that society, you know, puts out. And you have a different opinion about something because that's what you're used to. But society is just there, ready, waiting for you to say, no, this is the line that we follow. So between the age of 15 to like 26, 27, I lived a very inauthentic life. I checked into spaces as a lie. You know, people would ask me, who are you dating? And I always had a cooked up name of a guy somewhere, just because I know that's what they want to hear. And I would sit in family gatherings and people would be like, you know, it's you who we're waiting for next. You see, we've already done, your cousin is already married, so you're next. And I'll be like, yeah. Very soon. In fact, we've been talking with him. Yeah. I was always living a lie. Working at a local media house in Nairobi, I remember always in the morning, I would spend like 1 hour looking at my wardrobe and saying, okay, if I put this one on, it will be too much. Okay, let me tone it down with this. Okay, and or maybe this, or maybe that, or maybe that. And every single time I would present myself in spaces, it would work for society, but it really wouldn't work for me, you know? So when I think about those 10 years, every single time these days I sit to peel the layers, I'm like, I wasted so much time. But I don't blame myself. But if there's one thing that I fear right now, is to ever live an inauthentic life. You know, I know what it did to me. I know the kind of, you know, mental space and whatever that it put me in. I saw myself just constantly, you know, making other people happy, but really never thinking about myself. And, you know, like taking my power back through the TEDx and taking my power back through the work that I do, you know. Right now, I feel like a completely different human being. In fact, I feel like I'm being reconnected with the child, you know, that was just living in a home where there was a lot of love and nobody ever questioned, and whatever you want to do is cool, you know. So I think my fear is to ever find myself ever living an inauthentic life, because authenticity is beautiful. You know, when you just show up at yourself, whether it makes other people uncomfortable or not, that's on them. You're just living, you're just being you, you're just flowing. So I think that's my greatest fear, to ever go back into a space like that. And I work every single day to make sure that I do everything within my power to try and remain as authentic as possible, and to never give anybody else or society the opportunity to write what I'm supposed to do, because this is my life, I'm going to write it myself. There's a poem, in fact, I said I was going to read it, that I know you must know 100%. So this, every single time, you know, I think and I'm a little bit stuck sometimes, I always go back to this. And my mom is the one who introduced me to this poem, and it's by Jonathan Carriara. It's called Grass Will Grow. So I will read it. If you should take my child, give my hand strength to dig his grave, cover him with earth, send a little rain, for grass will grow. if my house should burn down so that the ashes sting the nostrils, making the eyes weep, then send a little rain, for grass will grow. But do not send me madness. I ask for tears. Do not send me moon-hard madness to lodge snug in my skull. I would you send me the hordes of horses, galloping, crashing, but do not break the yoke of the moon on me. Send a little rain, for grass will grow. So I always think about this poem in any single thing that I do, in my work, in my existence, going back to that same little phrase that I love, for if you're buried and you're received, you will germinate. So when you're speaking to your higher power and when you're doing many different things and you feel like you're stuck, just always ask the universe to send a little rain, because you will grow again. Through all those struggles and through all that pain, you will still grow again. You know, and even when we are celebrating, because we also have beautiful wins in our lives, we remember that at one particular point things were hard, but grass still, you know, managing it one way or the other to grow. As a Kikuyu, I know of a small little thing that traditionally happens when people eat goat meat, and you're given the shoulder blade. There's a nice little part of the shoulder for the goat. And when you're done with it, in the Kikuyu culture, they always say you need to break it and like create a little hole. And when I asked what is the reason of doing that, they said because when you throw it down, you have to leave a little space for grass to grow, for the next goat to be able to have some grass to feed on, so that you can have some food, you know, in the next couple of months. So I love that poem, and it's like my mantra, and I always go back to it just to remember that, you know what, any season that you're in your life, always ask for a little bit of rain and grass will still grow.
Catch more African stories in the next episode of Legally Clueless.
Oh, I hope you enjoyed part two of Chris's story. I really connected with them when they said that after their mom died, they lost the person they could call anytime, the person who wouldn't judge them. And over the last year, I have grown a new level of respect for the magic that is motherhood. I am not a mother, but hear me out, because I really have come to truly understand that the only person who understood me at par or nearly as much as me was my mother. And that's just how it's always going to be. I don't know. I sometimes think, is there like a bond that I may not understand because I have not experienced motherhood, but is there like a tether from even before your child is born? I find that to be magical to even just think about, right? And I remember I looked for applause and understanding from everyone after my mom died, and that would just break my heart further because it would end in premium tears. Expecting people to act the way she would only sets me up for heartbreak, because when they failed to do this, it would reinforce the painful truth that she was actually gone. And so, I know I did that for a couple of years. To be quite honest, I think I only stopped doing it last year. I was doing it consciously and subconsciously for over a decade. And then I get so pissed off when people around me who said they loved me or cared for me did not act the way my mom would act in different situations, which is just one, recipe for disaster and heartbreak and premium tears. But two, it's also kind of unfair because it means you're not seeing these other people for who they are. You're not meeting them where they are. You're kind of setting unfair expectations for them, you know? Anyway, another thing that I remembered in Chris's story, when they were talking about very briefly when their mom was in hospital, and it just took me back to experiencing that for over decades. Like the first time my mom was admitted, I was in class 5, and this continued on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off until I was 23. And let me tell you, the exhaustion that comes with being I'm going to use caregiver, yet you are giving care in whatever capacity. So yeah, let's go with caregiver for a sick loved one. Although I know there's a different word, but I can't remember it right now. But you're a caregiver for a loved one who's sick, especially terminal illness. You're confronted with the thought of, this could be the last time I see them. so often, at a point you almost become numb, at least for me. I mean, I have to say my mom was ridiculously strong. I don't even know how she did it. So I wouldn't say our lives, well, let me talk about me. My life was super different. I think maybe also because it had been the norm for so long, since class five, it was normal, hospital visits, etc., going through the chemo cycles, the radio cycles, days when she can't leave the bed. Oh, and then that anxiety, because my mom had breast cancer and we go and come back, go and come back. And so that anxiety when it's gone and you're like, you want to celebrate because we're done with our treatment cycles, but like you're apprehensive, eh? You're anxious because you're just like, this bloody thing always keeps coming back. And then it would, and you're like, oh my goodness. Sometimes you get a bit jealous of other people who have a more quote-unquote normal life experience, but really what is normal? You start to find it to be so unfair, and then you feel guilty for feeling that because you're not the one who's sick, you know? Oh. It's just, it's wild. And so my heart goes out to anybody who has a sick loved one that they're looking after. Remember to also look out and after yourself. Find spaces that can fill you because you can't pour out of an empty glass. So the last thing I really identified with is when they spoke on society and identity. Oh my goodness, Chris. That part. Let me tell you, you've got to really ask yourself whose life you're living. Is it a life that honors you? Or is it a life to please others? For me, I now avoid anyone or any space that requires a reduced version of me. I want to arrive in all spaces, in all relationships, as my full self, abundantly. And that's a rule. It's a rule. I'm not willing to break that rule, you know? And if you give society the power to define you, you are going to live an uncomfortable, shallow, not big, very small life. You will not be happy. And we don't get repeats at this life thing. We only get one. And there is a beauty you unlock when you just say, you know what? Screw what society is saying. This is what I'm feeling inside. This is who I am. And there is nothing wrong with me being me. So I have put links to Chris's socials, as well as their organization, Bold Network Africa, in the show notes. Go and connect with them. See the work that they're doing. Get inspired, or even see how you can plug in and help. Remember that this podcast plays on Trace FM in Kenya. So if you go to traceradio.co.ke, you can stream and find us there every Monday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. and 11 p.m. And Fridays, we're there at 1 p.m. Make sure you join our community. Head over to our website, legallycluelessafrica.com. Sign up. And I'm telling you this, knowing damn well, I owe you guys a newsletter. And I'm here saying this in my chest. But don't worry, it's coming. Another thing that's coming in the next episode 220, is our hyper independence episode. Trust me, that one is one for the book. So remember, audio episodes go out every single Monday. Watch our video series and our tour series, which are seasonal, on our website, legallycluelessafrica.com. I'm going to leave you with a snippet from next week's episode. That's it for this episode of Legally Clueless. You can share this podcast with your friends. You can keep it for yourself. I'm not judging. Just make sure you're here next week for the next episode.